The first cell phone was demonstrated in 1973 by Martin Cooper. You know what wasn't demonstrated? Shared plans. Over 50 years later, you can save on one line thanks to Visible. When you switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless Visible, you can get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon for just $25 a month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees. No, really. You can look around for them. They're not there. Switch now at Visible.com. Save on wireless without the hassle. Switch to Visible today and save at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Here's a quick question for you. How did you sleep last night? If your battle for a good night's sleep feels relentless, I have the answer. It's a podcast called Sleepwave, with meditations and hypnosis created to help you fall asleep. My relaxation techniques will help you feel calm and ready for sleep, with soft music that will help you fall asleep in minutes. Most listeners never hear the end of an episode. So search Sleepwave on your favorite podcast app and find out why over a million people have fallen asleep to my voice.
Users lose all sense of reality and enter another world. Remember, do not underestimate the power of PlayStation.
Beyond.
Say it.
Beyond. Say it again.
There you go. There you go. Welcome to Podcast Beyond, episode 173, everybody. I'm your host, Greg Miller. This is IGN's official PlayStation podcast. I'm alongside the rug munching Ryan Clements.
Oh my God.
Now here. This is the first time Colin's new name is said in order. And somebody wanted me to do it this way, try it this way to see if it makes more sense. Colin, he only does everything Moriarty. Mm. Is that you like that, or do you like he only does everything Colin
I think
Moriarty?
It's probably better he only does everything Colin Moriarty.
Oh, really? I was about to say the opposite. I think Colin, he only does everything.
Someone did message us saying that my name should have been what is right now and will always be the guide's guru, Colin Moriarty.
I kind of like it as a full introduction for him. I mean, it doesn't make sense anyway you put it. Because if you say, Colin, he only does everything Moriarty, then it says, he only does everything Moriarty? What is Moriarty?
What is
everything Moriarty?
I understand. Yeah, well, I will say this, that I went on – so we did that NGP roundtable video. Uh-huh. And I went on YouTube to watch it or whatever, and one of the – it had like, you know, 50 thumbs ups or whatever was he only does everything, Colin Moriarty.
Okay.
So.
All right, that's it. He only does everything, Colin Moriarty. I think my brother from another mother, Anthony Gallegos.
Yay!
Destroyer of Metacritics.
Oh, come on. You're right in line with everything. Oh. Anthony just reviewed Killzone 3, everybody, you didn't know.
Killzone.
The Killzone 3 has been reviewed.
True, I haven't gotten the level of hate that I've gotten so far from this since I reviewed Uncharted 2. So.
Come on now. You think it's that bad so far?
Well, no.
I think I was very. I want to give a big shout out here to the reader/listener.
There have been some really good ones.
Yes, we are winning the war on trolls on IGN. The first 20 comments were all people saying good review. Not even a first. The first comment was 8.5, good review. I'm looking forward to playing this. And then they were talking about the game, and then some people were making fun of trolls, and then the real trolls started coming.
Do I have to make another blog post?
No, I think we're winning the war. People are getting it, and just. To bring it up, we're bringing in a new segment on the Conversational Podcast. It's called Comment Corner.
Oh. Comment Corner.
This is where I'll pick my favorite comment from a review and then read it aloud in my reader voice. This one comes
from it's the Comment Corner.
Oh, all right. Well, we'll work on that. We're going to have to work on that.
This one comes from Captain Kratos. It's directed to Anthony.
Captain
8.5! Man, fuck that shit. IGN can eat a dick. Now, the runner-up to this was a separate comment about 30 comments later, also from Captain Kratos. IGN can fuck themselves. Thank you. That was Comment Corner.
How does Binary fuck itself? Corner.
I love all these rational people that have played the game and made an opinion about
that it. Somebody did that, like a nine for graphics, and then there was lasting appeal was only blah blah blah. You got to be kidding me! And somebody was like, "Oh, you've already beaten the game, huh?" So we're winning the war here. Lots to talk about on Killzone.
Wait, when you say winning the war, you mean on the PlayStation channel? We're not getting a lot of trolls there?
I mean on reviews in general, I think.
Oh, okay.
I'm seeing more and more positive IGN comments. Not even positive, like, you did a great job, IGN. They can be constructive. I don't really agree with this, but I haven't played it myself.
Right.
But not just, fuck yourself, IGN.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm.
Stick your cock in an electrical socket. That's how you review games.
Yeah, well, it is.
Colin you don't home, calls it a burrito order, unzips,
and then I fuck
goes to
and
town.
Then I fuck a wall outlet.
Anthony, tell me about Killzone 3. Topic of the week.
It's a great game.
Great. 8.5,
8.5, yeah.
You liked it because?
I liked it because no one does the first person immersion thing better than Guerrilla in my mind. The close second is the people that are the people that make the Condemned games. Mm-hmm. Like those games are a great first
person
game.
What about Half-Life?
No. Half-Life 2 is a great game. It's a fantastic game, but climb a ladder in Half-Life and you slide up it. Get in a car, you're just like a camera that kind of like moves into it. Mm-hmm. Like nothing, you feel like when you play Half-Life, you're like, I'm a camera with a gun floating in front of it, which that's because you kind of are. Whereas like when you play Killzone, you feel like a human from like the way you pop up over cover to when you look at your gun while you reload it. Like Guerrilla were the pioneers of that. Well, maybe not necessarily the pioneers, but they were some of the ones that did it the best. You know, like even when I played Killzone 1, and I think that still is like what makes Killzone 2 such a cool game because it is like human versus human combat. Like that is like I don't think anyone does it quite as well. Like even when you play Call of Duty and stuff like that, you still almost feel like you're fighting robots and stuff. But just they have such great animations with the Hellghast and your own guys and stuff that it kind of brings home that kind of I don't know how horrible like human conflict is. You know, I mean, the game's obviously supposed to be fantastic and like science fiction and all that, but there's certain themes and stuff that run through it and stuff that you're like, wow, this kind of reminds me of what's going on in our own time.
So what didn't you like about it? What gives it the 8.5 instead of the
10? Killzone 3 has a terrible story. I mean, there's no... Like, they killed the only likable characters from the second game, which was...
Spoiler alert!
Well, yeah, if you never played 2, it's been a few years. Get on it.
The captain, right?
No, they killed Templar, who was the first likable guy in the PSP and the first game. And in the second game, they had this guy, Garza, who basically served as almost like the same role that Dom serves in Gears of War, which is to be like the player's kind of perspective. Like if someone's like, man, what we're doing is kind of fucked up, Garza would be the one that would say it. Garza was always the guy that was kind of like...
The human character?
He felt human, exactly. Yeah. All the other guys were just like, fuck yeah, we're killing things.
I got this crazy.
And then they
killed
him. And so now in the new game, it's just like two guys all the time being like, fuck yeah, we're angry. Fuck these guys. Yeah, awesome.
Yeah.
I just find that
kind of
flat.
Like a bro shooter.
Yeah. And not just that, but there are certain themes that I don't want to spoil too much, but they could have explored further and made it a much more interesting game. Yeah. As it is, it's still a really fun shooter. It's just...
Is this the last chapter of this saga?
Look at that. You just stole the question from Ask Blade's mouth, because he wrote into beyond@ign.com and said, if I could ask one more question, because he had asked a bunch of boring ones, do you think the ending is... this is the ending of the trilogy. Parentheses, it is a trilogy, right? Is it worth buying?
It's not a trilogy.
Okay.
It's very clearly a franchise.
Bro shooters will live forever.
Yeah. I always think Killzone could be more than that, though, right? That's kind of why I dug Killzone 2 so much. I'm not a first-person shooter fan. We talk about it on the show all the time, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I burn out of these games. And so Killzone 2, I thought, put you into – it was very, you know, first-person experience. I thought this – I hate Rico, you know what I mean? I thought Sev was fine in that game, but he was super quiet. And, you know, I thought the story was all right or whatever. And then 3 came out, and I was super excited, and I sat down and played it, and, you know – it runs better. I think it definitely looks better.
It's a beautiful game.
And they do a lot with environments this time around. There's a lot of different varied environments that you go through, which I thought Killzone 2 was sorely lacking. And then they drop you're getting in mechs, you're getting in vehicles. Like they do it where they're shaking it up to not be, you know, the same thing over and over again. But I burned out on this one too. Like yeah. I got to a point in single player, I'm like, I just don't care about these guys. Like I just don't care where their story's going. I'll wait until multiplayer.
One of my favorite moments from Killzone 2 and the time I felt like, and now I'm interested in the story, is when your ship gets invaded, mid orbit, and then Radek like uncloaks, and there's like this like almost like political slash like discussion between Radek and Templar, right? And they're having this awesome showdown like verbally. I thought at that point I was like, hey, this is kind of cool, and that was really the only moment I got that felt like that to me.
The universe that they've established is this weird complex thing that they don't necessarily always do a good job with, because they just basically say the Hellghast are evil, the Hellghast are bad, the Hellghast are evil. But really, when you find out, like if you do any sort of reading, because that's the only way to really find out, you find out that they're kind of a byproduct of like really horrible treatment, basically.
Yeah.
I mean, the government that you're fighting for and that are the good guys did not necessarily treat them in the best ways to make them like a happy people that would want to not like lash out in vengeance against
them. They kind of sent them to that horrible planet,
right? It's obviously like a play off of like the in-between World War I and World War II Germany, where it's like, you know, we left World War I Germany in such a horrible state financially and stuff that all they did is like a hyper-militarized, nationalized, and we're like, fuck everyone else. You know, they left us to be in a horrible place. And it's kind of the same thing. They just like, you know, they're a byproduct of being in a terrible situation. But you don't get any of that playing the actual games, hardly at all.
Yeah.
You know?
What a coincidence. I'm reading about the Weimar Republic right now.
Do they mention the Hellghast in it?
Yeah, they do. Yeah.
Okay. They might as well. Just switch out Hellghast for Germany.
And there was a lot of room for something really cool to be done here. Because, like, remember, like, when we first saw it, they pitched it that, you know, oh, well, you know, spoilers, everybody, if you haven't finished Killzone 2, bleep it out now. You know, they kill Vasari at the end of the game, who's, like, their figurehead. And so, like, when they showed us Killzone 3, they're like, now there's a civil war, and there's a struggle for power, and you're going to see Hellgast trying to do
it. And you guys are stuck on their planet.
Yeah. And it's like, that
you're
sounds
left
really
behind.
Cool. And that whole story is played out in a couple of cutscenes with Malcolm McDowell talking to this other dude, and then him just getting waxed. It's like,
yeah,
it
basically jumps time around a lot too, where it's like 6 months later, 6 months previously, yeah. And you're just like, what happened in between?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, show me.
Let me ask you this question, because this was I never really thought about this. I don't know too much of the mythology of Killzone, I guess too deeply, like I would Resistance or something. But when we did that Killzone in 5 minutes video, which I thought was really
good. Awesome. Watch it on IGN.com.
And they said something. They kind of referred to the fact that, like, you know, the humans. Well, everyone's human, but the Earth-based humans are on Helgen, and they're fine without suits and so.
Yeah.
So like it's like so why? How long do you have to be on that planet in order to have to wear the gas masks
and the
Nazi-like cloaks that everyone wears?
If I'm gonna be a Killzone apologist. The only thing I can think of is that maybe the Hellgast at this point have tamed it and brought it back to a livable level. But for them, they'll always be fucked up from the
but
initial.
But why do they need the gas masks if they've acclimated to that environment?
I think they are genetically slightly different from humans over the course of basically taming this horrible, screwed up planet.
Right. Well, so wouldn't that mean they don't need the gas masks and we would because they've evolved to adapt to that environment?
I'm saying
that look at that big thing, shoot it.
I'm saying I don't think the planet's actually fucked up anymore, but they'll always
need
respirators.
Yeah, I understand what you're saying. So that's why the humans are okay. I mean, that would be – that just seemed like a big – I never even thought about
more
that, but that seems like a big
hole.
More
importantly, it's just to write them off as evil. That's what it comes down to. It's just to make them – you can see it's a visual trick in the gameplay design to be like, I know instantly who's evil and who's good.
It is actually kind of helpful because I sometimes have that problem in shooters if they're all humanoid
looking.
Who's on
my team?
Yeah, who's on my team?
Yeah.
Dear God, I'm sorry I shot you in the face.
Right, it happens all the time in a Call of Duty and stuff like that, right? Yeah. Killzone, they have really smart visual design from the masks, but also to the lights. All the bad guys are always wearing red lights. All the good guys are like G.I. Joes wearing blue lights.
Blue and greens, yeah.
So. It's funny, too, because like what you were talking about, the Weimar Republic and stuff, and it just seems like the Helgen really are Nazis down to their logo and
in the gray uniforms.
Like they're wearing dusters, and it is kind of strange, like... I guess how that goes or whatever, but like how you, like you said, like you can kind of, like when you read about them or whatever, I kind of, they're not like Chimera, like you kind of sympathize with them in a way when you're like just on their planet destroying them and they're like in this really hostile environment. But at the same time, it really does invoke like, almost like a steampunk aesthetic, like Final Fantasy VI did with Gestel and the Empire. And stuff
I mean,
like that.
It's true. When you play through Killzone, it almost has that thing where you're like, oh, this feels futuristic, but at the same time, not.
Mm-hmm.
Like it, you know, they aren't living in like, crazy apartments with space elevators, like their buildings are still made of concrete and rebar, and you know, everything looks twisted, like it could be like a World War II battlefield until like a mech rolls on the scene, you know, and you're like, what the fuck?
There's a mech.
But I do like how you were saying, like, to me it was always like it wasn't clear, like it's always clear obviously Hitler was evil, the Nazis were very evil, and but what the hell are you gonna have, like, they're questionable motives and you don't really know, like, why you're killing them.
I mean, the first game you play it and it makes a lot of sense too, because there are certain characters from the Helgen people that actually like work with you in the first game, and you play as them. They have this really weird interplay between like politics, and the characters are always lashing out at each other about like why they're doing what they're doing and stuff. They kind of, it did a much better job with like kind of building up like a motive for people. And in this game, it's just kind of like, well, we're stuck here, fucking kill them all, you know?
Right.
That's the Rico motive.
Snap, jetpack, son.
Before we jump on to the few reader questions here, my final one for you is, how's multiplayer? I'm really interested to get. I like the
beta. Yeah, I mean, some people got mad that in my review I only like glossed over multiplayer in a paragraph. But the thing is, like, multiplayer is a huge component of Killzone. But to me, that's not the reason I play a Killzone game. I still think multiplayer is great and it's fun. But for me, Killzone games have always been about the campaign first. You know, but multiplayer, if you like 2, it's awesome. Like, I played quite a bit of 2, and now I'm playing 3, and... You know, it's in a lot of ways, it's still the same game. They still have, like, the same objective-based multiplayer. I mean, they have their new mode, Operations.
Yeah, yeah.
But really, that's just an objective-based multiplayer game where you get a cool cutscene that shows, if you did really well, it shows you in the cutscene. So you get to be like, oh, game over Greg. Now he's planning a charge and blowing up this level. But, you know, the one thing they did do great is the change that they did to the leveling up mechanics, because every game that's a multiplayer shooter these days has to have leveling up and, you know, points and perks and all that. But now you can spend them how you want, because in the old game you kind of had to use a class and grind away on a class before you're like, oh, now my medic finally has a healing gun.
Yeah.
You know, and now it's like you start, you have some points, you can play an engineer and always play an engineer for hours because you think they're the only class that's cool right off the bat, and you can accrue a bunch of points and then go spend them all on a medic to make the medic worthwhile
that's really cool.
Yeah,
that's really cool.
Yeah, you know, it's a fun game. I think
I thought you did fine in your review. As somebody who proofed it and helped edit it, I think the fact that we have multiplayer beta, a real preview up, and the fact that, yeah, it's Killzone 2 expanded and fixed and better.
I mean, the point is that it's fun. That's what I'm trying to convey to you. I don't need to write you a fact sheet explaining every mode of it. Explore it for yourself. It's awesome.
Yeah.
All right, Matt.
Yeah.
No, go ahead. Go. What do you want to know? What do you want to know, Ryan?
Nothing. Oh, all right. Well,
I was going to ask. Yeah. No, I was just going to say, I think that's often like a misconception with people when they read our reviews. They think like, oh, you know, we barely touched on this at all. Well, you know, honestly, you describe any video game, you could write like a 10-page treatment of it, yeah. if not more, if you wanted to actually describe every little bit. And, you know, honestly, we're trying to get you the most concise and important information.
Yeah, I'm not trying to write a consumer report. I am trying to tell you, however, whether or not these things succeed and what they're trying to do, and whether or not, most importantly, it's fun. Like, that is what it comes down to for us.
Chances are, fun is everything.
If
you want a more dialed-in component of any game, you can look through the related articles and find that.
Yeah, you know what I mean? Totally.
Like, this is for the one person who just pops up and wants to know about Killzone 3 and get back to work.
Should they buy it?
Is it good? Is it bad? Is it great? Is it awful? Some examples of what's good, some examples of what's bad. I think that's what the components of every great review.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Matt Goff has a question for you, though.
All right, what's up, Goff?
He says, I'm planning on playing through Killzone 3 twice, once with the normal controller and once with Move controllers. Which way would you recommend first?
I would play with the standard controller. I mean, if that's what you're comfortable with, right? To me, the Move is a interesting option if, like, someone like your dad or someone wanted to play it that has never played a shooter with dual analogs, and maybe they have a hard time with that. Because, like, it plays basically like a Wii shooter. You know, I've played a lot of first-person shooters on Wii as well. And it has some interesting things into it that actually make it kind of easier. Like, you can toggle it on and off, but there's an auto-lock. Like, you just hit the aim button, and it'll basically snaps to and stays on the nearest opponent. So then your gun is already locked on them, and then you can move your gun slightly to, like, shoot them in the leg or shoot them in the head. But it's generally locked onto, like, their center mass, you know. Mm-hmm. So it has certain things that make it easier. I mean, it's fun. It's kind of a gimmicky thing, but by no means is it, like, the awesome way to
definitive play. Way.
This is the way to play Killzone. No, it exists, you know, but I would never choose to play it that way.
Okay. I totally forgot that it had move support, so that's...
You know, it's like I've played the new SOCOM that's coming out before, too, right? And I played it with move, and I've played it without move.
Yeah.
And it's like, again, that's just... If you really want to try it with move, it exists. But
I enjoyed it with move.
Yeah, again, but it's not...
I would
still choose to play with the dual analog. I don't know.
I was interested in how Killzone 3 felt with the move just because... Killzone's controls are so heavy. At least Killzone 2's were. So I was interested to see how snapping around the screen would be and stuff like that.
They also, you know, that site Digital Foundry that Eurogamer owns, they did prove that Killzone 2 to 3, they have improved the input lag considerably to where basically 3 is on par with every other shooter.
That's good because I did find
weighty.
That.
It does. That's the thing I've always – but that's the thing is I didn't want them to get rid of that because that's the thing I've always loved about Killzone is everything has weight to it because you're not a robot. You are a human being who has, like, moments of hesitation and, you know. I did like the
more realistic feel in a way, but the one thing I did want, when we played together the co-op, a while ago, it immediately mapped the buttons all different because the one thing that frustrates me about Killzone's default is like snapping the or like clicking the analog stick to go into aim mode. I'm like, this is awful.
I do the same thing.
So I will say that the move control has one really negative thing. I didn't really mention my review because it's not the end of the world, but to me it's like the only gimmicky move thing it has is to do a melee attack. You have to stab forward with the move controller. I just think.
Yeah, no, thank you.
You shouldn't stab forward with something you're aiming with.
Yeah.
Agreed. Kyle Smith has two questions for you, Anthony. Number one, is Rico just as annoying as before?
Yes.
God, yeah, I agree. And then number two, it sounded like Anthony felt the story for Killzone 2 was a bit stronger than Killzone 3. Is that true?
Yes.
All right. That was easy. Look at that. No pain.
But like I said, because they had the more interesting interplay between characters like Garza. And the moment when he died and stuff was actually kind of a heavy moment and... Your character freaks out on Rico about that because it's kind of Rico's fault that he dies.
Totally.
So it's like, there's just...
Rico is just a disaster
when you watch Killzone in 5 minutes. He's been a disaster from day one.
He's basically just way too aggressive.
Yeah.
He's hyper aggressive. He's the example of the quintessential, like, ape man that just runs... Well, hold on. I don't mean that to sound horrible if it sounds horrible. I just mean ape in the sense that he's like a fucking...
He's a meathead.
He's just a dumb savage. He's like the stereotypical, like, lunkhead military guy that people expect.
Yeah, watch that Killzone in 5 minutes when he yells at the guy in game one, because that's amazing. A Lucky Bum asks, now for the real question.
Okay.
Let's say that Killzone 3 had a very strong story on par with Uncharted 2 or Infamous.
Okay.
How would the score improve?
If it was a score, if it had a story that was like Uncharted where I'm suffering, well, not suffering, that's fucked up to Uncharted, but I'm saying where I'm playing through shooting parts that aren't as great as other, you know, there are some games that do third-person shooting much better than Uncharted, right? Mm. But Uncharted, it's like you completely don't care about that much because the story is just so fucking incredible. And, you know, if Killzone had that, considering that it already has great combat, it'd be one of the best games of this generation, hands down. You know, I still think that Killzone is one of the best PS3 exclusives, but you know, it's not. I wouldn't put it as one of like.
Here's a question for the room.
Yes.
Are we ever going to see a first-person shooter? And I guess Half-Life is already there, kind of. I guess, but more of a military-based one. Why do these games not have amazing stories? Mm. Why does this always seem to be the gripe with like a Black Ops or whatever?
Well, that's funny because we talk about it a lot, but like that's why Resistance is good. You know, it's because of the story. Resistance story is awesome. That's why it's a good game.
The universe is awesome. The story in the second one was not good.
I liked the story.
And I don't think Nathan Hale's a very good character either.
He wasn't. He was in the first game.
But I think that there's... I don't know that a first-person shooter is going to be able to tell a story so much, because when you're playing a first-person shooter, the whole point is they can't... They have to find an interesting way to do it that's not necessarily cutscenes, because you can't keep a player like too often from having time where they're shooting things. And it's really hard to tell a story when you're just pumping bullets at someone's face. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like BioShock did a decent job of it as a first-person shooter, right? Yeah. But people would also point to BioShock and be like, the shooting was really only okay. It was another one of those, well, the mechanics were okay, but the story was fucking incredible.
Yeah.
That's kind of how I feel about Resistance. Like I always said, Killzone is a technically... I understand why people look at Killzone as a technically finer shooter, because it is, you know? But I'm compelled by, it's easy to maybe not easy, but it's fundamentally more easy to make a story like Killzone's where it's like kind of a hypothetical future. What I liked about Resistance was that it took human history up to a certain point, stopped it, and then just completely rewrote it like Harry Turtledove style. Yeah. So like, that's what I enjoy about it. And it seems like Killzone has gone more for the you know, this is a great game, this is an intense game, this is a multiplayer game, this is a game you want to play. Resistance is 3 especially has already been priming itself as like, this game is about its story and ambience. Like everything we've seen about it is all about like what the hell is going on there. So I suppose like even we haven't, you know, we have a preview because the UK guys played it. But it seems like maybe there's a nice contrast between the two series now that they've been looking for a while, which is like Killzone 3 is a fundamental shooter fan shooter, and Resistance is trying to do something unique with the shooter space and maybe turning it more into a Left 4 Dead style.
I mean, I know that people hate the comparison, but to me it's like Killzone is kind of like, it is like the PS3's Halo in a way, in the sense that like I don't play Halo games for the story. Like I play Halo games because they give fun scenarios to shoot things in. You know, the story is kind of a secondary thing.
Well, I was going to say, just to go off on a tangent, that having just beat Halo Reach, I still think that was actually a game that I was invested in the story of. I was very much enjoying it.
I thought they didn't do a great job of making you invest in those characters either. You were just like
certainly not. It's certainly not the best, but I feel like out of the Halo games, at least that was the best one.
I mean, I still feel like one of the best first-person stories I've played has to probably either be Condemned or maybe, even though it's on rails, I mean, Dead Space Extraction does a great job with like first-person storytelling.
But you were making the comparison between Killzone and something and
Halo
I'm just saying, both Killzone and Halo are just games that you play for the shooting fun and the. I know people will talk about how much they love the story, and again, I think Halo has an awesome universe. Mm-hmm. They just don't ever do a very good job of conveying that universe to me.
Yeah, understandable. All
right, final question comes from Mario. Has Anthony beaten the game like 7 times? Also, does he pee his pants beyond?
No, I've only beaten the game once and probably played through the vast majority of the levels a second time.
Okay, but so do you pee your pants?
No, I haven't peed my pants in many years.
Okay. So basically, he is beating it in a normal capacity.
You don't need to beat a game like 8 times to know whether or not it's good.
Exactly.
Let's start the show proper with what is and forever will be the Roper Report. Time for some news. It's another column where we already jam here, so I'm sure there'll be some editorializing on the news. He filled it up. He's got 14 stories on here. I've already pruned 2 out.
Really?
I combined another. Yeah, you get crazy with this. This is why.
This is everything that we put on the site. This,
I know. You don't need that.
Here, just let
We're
me.
Supposed to have the big stuff. You want to read the Roper Report?
Yeah, I'll just read it.
All right.
All right. Number
don't,
one.
Now don't. 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 You know. Don't just steamroll it. Enjoy it. Savor some of these stories.
Is the NGP getting multiple SKUs? If a Eurogamer report is to be believed, Sony intends on releasing two versions of the next generation portable, one with 3G and one without. That same report confirmed that Sony is currently working out 3G partnerships outside of Japan and that there will be an extra cost for consumers.
I don't like that idea. One SKU. Don't confuse the
matter. Well, not only one SKU, but if you're already going to ask someone to pay, what have you guys estimated on the show it's going to cost?
I think it'll cost $400.
I think
it'll
be right, $400. And then what are you going to do, $30 data plan a month or something on top of that? Like, that is just...
I'm just disappointed in this news the most just because if they want to pave the way to the future, if they really believe in what they're doing with the PSP, then 2 or whatever the fuck it's called, then they'll stick with the 3G, put it in even if there's going to be a hit to consumers. Because, I mean, how much more... What, are they going to take $50 off the SKU and then be like, oh, you can have it without...
That's
3G.
Basically what Amazon's done, but at least in Amazon's case with the Kindle. Now, granted, you don't use the 3G that much, but you have it for free.
Yeah.
What was the site that had the NGP pre-orders for $1,000?
Oh, that was GameStop. When I saw that, I was like, I felt like that was like GameStop's way of trying to bully Sony,
totally,
giving them the price.
Totally.
Like, look, we're
going to
scare
move.
The fuck out of consumers if you don't tell us what it really is.
100%, I agree. I still think there's a chance that the 3G is just going to be used for that constant on, see what your friends are playing, connect to the store thing, and not for gaming, which would make maybe 3G more... reasonable.
Yeah, I will say that during that presentation, as I believe now all of you guys have seen the video feed, when they were showing like how you can like follow what people are playing like around, like I thought that was the coolest. Like, I don't know how much I would use it,
yeah,
but that is such a cool idea.
I mean, the social aspect
and the fact that you can buy it immediately. Like, if you're like, you see a friend like walking through the park and you're like, oh, what are they playing? Oh, this game, and you go right to the store and buy it. Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, see, that's why, so cool. And that's one of those things where that was my whole argument against why there'd be two SKUs. That's how they pitched and showed off this fucking thing. Yeah. And now they're going to be like, oh, but you cannot have that if you want.
Yeah.
Story number 2.
Yeah.
Demon's Souls sequel has been officially named. Earlier known as Project Dark, the game is now known as Dark Souls. The game is referred strictly to as a spiritual successor to Demon's Souls and now a literal story-driven sequel.
I'm sorry if it says now.
From the reveal video, the game looks and plays like Demon's Souls. It will be released exclusively on the PS3 in Japan, but will come out on both PS3 and 360 elsewhere.
Oh.
The game should come out sometime this year, and Jim Ryler would be very happy.
He won't play it until next year, he says.
The trailer looks really cool, man. I mean, I know I didn't give Demon's Souls much more than like 4 or 5 hours of my time, but I think I'm going to go back.
That's enough, man.
Just because, like, I like really hard games. I really do. But like we discussed, I don't like games that are hard just for the sake of being hard.
Yeah.
You know? There's got to be something more in there.
There are just certain people that game jives with. So I will say that when we were all recently out of the office,
when I went
back to my hotel room, Ryan Scott, editor of GameSpy, was making a spreadsheet on how to level his Demon's Souls character.
Jeez.
He loves it.
That's loves awesome. It.
All right.
I actually kind of like how they are not calling it Demon's Souls 2. Now, unfortunately, they lose out on the, Demon's Souls 2, I liked the first one.
No, because there's nobody who's like that.
Trust me, the very few people that love Demon's Souls know that it's called Dark Souls.
And that's why I like is that we are so inundated with sequels and prequels. And
there were certain Wii games that came out from little tiny companies where they called it blank 2, even though there was never a blank 1, just to get sales.
Really?
Yeah.
Really? I don't know.
There was a game called Anubis for Wii that just came out as Anubis 2. There was never an Anubis one.
Oh, my God.
That's fascinating.
All right, so Ubisoft has revealed PlayStation 3 exclusive collection called the Splinter Cell Trilogy. It's coming out March 22nd and will contain remastered HD versions of Splinter Cell, Pandora Tomorrow, and Chaos Theory. They will all be on a single Blu-ray disc and support 3D, and it will be $39.99.
Nice.
That is awesome. The 360 doesn't get very many, any HD game remakes. They're getting Beyond Good and Evil.
Beyond.
We're all getting that, though.
Right, that's what I'm saying, and that's because it's one game. It's the Blu-ray disc, yeah.
I love that Blu-ray disc, man.
Ubisoft has also revealed that the Prince of Persia Classic Trilogy HD is getting a disc-based release. The individual games, Prince of Persia, Sands of Time, Warrior Within, and The Two Thrones, are already available for download on PSN, but this release will bundle them together for $39.99. That is awesome as well.
Yeah.
So it's like a $5 savings. But you do get it on a disc, and you don't have to download them and stuff. I mean, that's kind of nice. Yeah. But then you pay tax.
Yeah.
Increasingly.
You can have them right now. Yeah. You just download them right now and have them all.
Increasingly, too, I'm deciding that I want less game cases because my shelf's 100%. Getting a little out of hand.
Yeah, I like having them on the hard drive. Although,
I understand.
Okay, all right. Conversational podcast. Before we jump ship, there is a problem everyone needs to know about. One of our readers wrote in. He was none too pleased about it because he picked the worst time ever. Alec writes in and says, I ordered a new 500 gigabyte hard drive because I was out of space on my 80 gig hard drive. It came in the mail Saturday. This happens to be the day I also picked up Mass Effect 2. Took out the old hard drive, put the new one in, had the new patch on the memory stick, blah, 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 blah. Thing, PS3 says I need to put a 3.56 firmware in there, so I plug in the flash drive. The PS3 starts to search for the data, then nothing. Apparently your PS3 won't recognize patch 3.56 from an external memory device when trying to install a new hard drive. I checked the message boards to figure out why, and everyone trying to install a new hard drive is shit out of luck. So until Sony releases a fix, I can't play Mass Effect 2. Not really a question here, just wanted to make sure the Beyond Nation knew about it.
Can I ask you a question, because I've thought about expanding my hard drive before. Yeah. How do you transfer content? Is that possible?
Yeah, you back it up. You make a backup on an external hard drive.
We have a video, right?
Yep, there's an old Chris Roper video.
I will have to watch this.
Yeah, yeah.
It's super easy. Or you can borrow my... Do you have an external?
Yeah, I have an external.
I just backed mine up the other day.
It's just, yeah, my hard drive is increasingly becoming full as well. Yeah,
I'm a little confused. So once you put in a new hard drive, can't you format it and then just go online and download the update?
You should be able to.
Yeah, so what's the problem then? Just because he can't get it off a stick?
The problem is that when they put out the new firmware for PS3 retails, because they're trying to stop all this piracy stuff and get out in front of the jailbreaks, they did something weird to the firmware that now makes it not switch out hard drives. It's some kind of DRM thing. Sony's well aware that something's fucked up. They're working on a fix. There'll be a new firmware out that'll allow you to do it. But for the Alec picks the worst weekend possible to try to switch out his hard drive, and this happens to him.
No, I mean, I feel for him. It's just...
I don't feel for him. Be patient.
Okay. It's a shitty situation, but I understand that it wasn't like Sony did this to be malicious. This wasn't the planned part of that firmware.
They have to stop.
And you know that because you work at Sony.
Yeah, well, Jeff Rubenstein and his wife, when they're making minis, they invite me over. While they're making them, I talk to them about it.
Here's the thing that I'm frustrated with, is that they release this patch to try and fix the piracy, and within hours, it's just broken again. Well, it's a waste of their resources.
It is.
Yeah, they need to either... I don't know. They just need
to
move on.
They can't fix the piracy.
I would just say, admit it's going to happen and be done with it.
And release new hardware if you want.
Back lean
it. I was going to say, it's a hardware problem. It's not a software problem.
They need to stop wasting their time.
Here's the thing. It's funny. If they're really going to ride PS3 for the next few years, which I think they are, I don't think we're going to see PS4 for a very long time.
I'd be very surprised.
Then it would be cool for them to come out at E3 and say, like, kind of admit, like, well, not, they don't have to admit it publicly, but
hey, everybody, we've been hacked.
No, it's to say, like, we've had some hardware complications. We're releasing another new PlayStation 3, and it's $250.
Don't even say that there's a new one. Just start shipping slims with the new hardware in it and just...
Well, I think it would be cool for them to, in other words, for them to get another price drop in there, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I think that, honestly, we've reached a point in this whole these whole shenanigans where honesty would make the best policy. And I think if they did come out and just said, like, you know, they joked about it like he joked with them losing all their secrets, E3 back, and they're just like, hey, you guys know we've had this problem. Here's what we're going to do for you guys, and like put out a new system, maybe with some polishes, some tweaks, a lower price.
Yeah, cut $50 off it.
Yeah, great.
No, yeah. The 8,000th iteration of Final Fantasy IV is set to come to PSP on April 19th. Final Fantasy IV's release on PSP is mostly due to including Final Fantasy IV The After Years, a WiiWare-based sequel to Final Fantasy IV that all of 10 people played because it was on WiiWare. There's also a new content on the PSP release that bridges the main game with The After Years.
Nice.
Does that excite you, Ryan?
Yeah, it's cool.
I'm not excited about it at all. I love that game, and I've played it now enough.
Is 4 the one with the opera scene that everyone always famously talks about?
4 is the one where you travel to the moon at the end.
Of course.
Yes.
Let's take it to the moon!
It's great. All right, so I played the game on Super Nintendo. I played it on PlayStation. I played it on Game Boy Advance. I played it on DS. Played it on PSP now. It's a little much. It's getting a little much.
Meanwhile, says you had to play it all those times?
I don't know. No one did.
Exactly.
But
you only have yourself to blame.
I actually wrote the guides for the GBA and DS ones.
So you mean you copy and pasted?
Yeah. Well, I wrote the one for GBA, and then I had like a template, and I had to change some things around because it wasn't quite the same. But it's really starting to piss me off. Why are they ignoring 6? I'm sick of this shit with Final Fantasy IV. I want 6.
I'm sick that whatever this game's going to cost, because there's always a square tax to games that's always like $10 more than other companies. It is a square tax because
they know
they can take advantage of people.
No, I agree.
Dissidia
Dukakum.
Dukakum. Now I'm trying to decide. And we originally were saying, the correct pronunciation is Duodecum.
It's actually Dick-caucus.
Now I'm wondering if it's like Duodecim, like it has like a softer...
Call it Dissidia.
Michael Dukakis. Yeah.
Dissidia 2. Dissidia 12.
Dissidia Michael Dukakis.
I think that's only $29 or $39. It's cheaper than... It's like the same price.
That's what we call
of
a fire sale.
PSP.
No, but I know what Anthony's talking about because like well, DS games were like $30, but right. if they
and
were,
then Square were always $40.
Yeah, it's like.
But this particular title is either at the price of standard PSP titles or it might be less. I forgot the exact price.
Also, if you've been anxiously awaiting word on Parasite 3, Eve 3, wait no longer. Parasite Eve, the third birthday, is set for release on PSP on March 29th.
I'm excited about that, dude.
Really? People still care about that franchise?
Dude, those games were awesome on PlayStation.
Also, it's no longer, there's no Parasite Eve in the title. It's
no,
just
I know.
The third birthday.
It is Parasite Eve 3, though.
I know. But it's just the third.
I'm just going to call it Parasite.
Yeah, you know, games were also awesome the first time you played it, Dino Crisis, but we don't need another one of those.
Yeah, we do.
Okay. The original PS1 title, Oddworld, Abe's Odyssey, is getting an HD remake. Developers, Just Dead Water, are working on it. They're also working on Oddworld, Stranger's Wrath, but due to Microsoft's 2GB limit on downloadable games, Just Dead Water's already said that Stranger's Wrath can't go to XBLA. Will Abe's Odyssey also be a Force exclusive because of this? We shall see. That makes me... kind of sad, but I'll still play it on PS3, whatever. Did you guys ever play Stranger's Wrath?
No, those games were dumb.
No, Stranger's Wrath was a fantastic shooter because all the ammo you shot was biological, and it was hilarious. You would shoot like a squirrel out of your crossbow that would then go and attack guys. You were a bounty hunter. It was awesome.
It's just. I think it's so silly. Like, I hope Microsoft changes that for their game, like for the people that like to play on Xbox, because that's kind of a disappointing thing to not get games just because of the size of it.
Well, it just comes down to the fact that they're most... basic, like, SKU at this point, like the Slim that comes with the 2GB stick, basically those consumers wouldn't be able to get it.
Right.
And so it's just this fear that they would have content that consumers, you know, would be like, why can't I buy this?
Mark Ryan was saying something, I didn't know this either, that the originally Microsoft's limit on downloadable size games was 64 megabytes.
Yep, because that was the biggest memory card.
So I was like, wow, that's wild. I didn't know that. Yeah. That's crazy.
Yep.
Try playing Shadow Complex with that.
Nope, can't do it.
Yep.
Activision has released some intriguing Black Ops statistics. These include the fact that Black Ops players have killed over 9 times world population, around 54 billion people, and have fired more than 1 trillion shots in battle. Wow. 147 billion COD points have been earned, and over 43 million user-generated videos have been uploaded.
This is some numbers.
I love 54 billion people have been killed. That's not even possible.
Yeah.
That's good stuff.
EA has also revealed staggering sales data for 2 big releases. The subpar Medal of Honor reboot and critically acclaimed Need for Speed, Hot Pursuit, have both sold over 5 million units each.
Nice.
It's good for them.
That's surprising to me. Well, not necessarily, right? They marketed the
shit. Yeah, Medal of Honor. What I'm interested in now is it, because I really thought Medal of Honor's campaign was the most fucking boring thing I had played in a long time. It was fucking really boring. I couldn't believe how boring it was. Like when I was playing, because I'm a big Medal of Honor fan, man. I loved
the old ones.
Yeah, exactly. I was one of the people around. Those, like, I even loved Airborne. Yeah.
Oh, Airborne, I thought was good. Pacific, whatever.
Assault or whatever.
Rim.
Pacific Rim. Yep. It's all about the volcanoes.
Pacific. The Pacific game was generally the one people hated, where you had to fucking fight alligators as you were going down a river. That's not a joke.
By the way, at the mention of Need for Speed, when we were driving to Tiburon,
you
remember that?
Yeah.
We literally saw a fucking cop car that was like built out of like a fucking
a Dodge Charger.
Yeah, it was like a supercar.
It was a supercar cop car, and I was like, oh, we're in fucking Hot Pursuit over here. It was hysterical.
But I am glad that Medal of Honor sold well, just for one reason, because I do want to see now what they're going to do with the sequel to it. Because the fundamentals of the game were fine. It played fine. It was just like so – it just felt so boring.
I think it was a game that was manufactured in like a year.
Yeah.
That was the problem. I mean, give a team a proper budget and like, you know, and not the fear that they're going to get laid off when this doesn't work.
Yeah.
And let them actually do something.
Yeah, so now maybe we'll get that.
Probably not.
Yakuza 4 news.
Yeah!
The demo is hitting PlayStation Network February 15th in North America and February 16th in Europe.
And I believe those numbers are actually wrong.
Really?
Because it's PSN Plus in the teens, and then in the 20s it's when you can just get it off.
That was off the store, so that we have on the site.
Only on PS3 though, right?
What do you mean on PSP too?
No, well, I updated the PS3 story yesterday.
I think I got it wrong.
Coco.
Oh, okay, I don't know. I'll have to go back and look.
Maybe it failed or something. I'll check it out.
So, if rumors are believed, Sony is going to soon reveal PlayStation Move functionality for the PC.
Finally.
This comes from an upcoming GDC 2011 panel description, which describes a discussion of the new Move server project that will make it possible for academics and hobbyists to develop software using the PlayStation Move controller on their own PCs.
That's pretty cool. See what they can do with it.
I mean, it actually might make having a Move more viable.
Yeah,
speaking of which, Philip writes into beyond@ign.com and says, any news on Move-compatible games coming out this year?
Yeah, Sorcery's coming up.
Come on.
What, it's not coming out this year?
I don't know, is it? I don't think so. Did they ever put a date on it?
It's coming out this year. We saw it a year ago.
I saw it in Germany
I saw it at E3, yeah. I mean, they've been quiet.
Yeah.
Moves already been regaled to just, oh, yeah, it's also in Killzone 3 if you want to do
Sports Champions 2.
You can play SOCOM with it.
Yeah, you can play SOCOM. But beyond that, I mean, beyond. I don't know what we're looking down the sights at.
No, I don't know, man. I was excited about the move just with Sports Champions because I actually thought it worked really well, but now I'm just like, I don't even care, you know?
Dead Space Extraction.
Dead Space is good for that.
Yeah, that's the best move.
And TV Superstars.
New DC Universe Online content is coming. The first round of DLC should be reaching gamers by the end of this month. There will be a new Catwoman-related content, Valentine's Day content, and more. Welcome to every MMO.
Yeah. I thought Colin drastically undersold this piece of the news.
Why?
Because there's so much content coming to it, and you're just like,
well, I didn't want to, like...
A Catwoman episode!
Yeah. Oh, wow.
New armors!
No one gives a shit about patch notes.
A Bane duo! No one gives a shit about
patch. Go look up the patch notes.
All right. Well, there's
I flip out when StarCraft gets patched. I love it.
Well, that's different because it's balance tweaks and all that.
Shit, and I'm like, oh, plus 2 seconds to build for Zerglings? Yeah! No.
Real quick, before we move on, we have two DC Universe questions. Let's knock them out right here.
Okay.
First is from Chris. He says, DC Universe, how do you change your classes? I think I remember hearing once that once you unlock tank or any other class, when you go into a queue, you can select a role for the instance, but it doesn't necessarily change your class. Is there another way to do it? Yes, of course, Chris. Whatever you change, you have two roles to play as. Like, I play as a controller, as Taylor Swift. I can either be, a controller or damage. You can change that from up on the D-pad. You can cycle your stance there. Or when you go into an instance or an alert or something, you can choose there and be ready to go. Why are you shaking your head?
DC Universe Online has broken one of the fundamental design things of an MMO to me.
They made it fun?
Which is...
High five.
Which is that...
Greg just high-fives himself.
Every class that I see should be easily identifiable just by looking at them. When I see a character in World of Warcraft, I can immediately look at them and be like, that is a paladin. But in this game, there's no way to know because they want you to be able to create such an elaborate character and have them do whatever.
But you can't... I mean, are you talking about fighting people or when you're teamed with them?
In general, just, you know, I just...
When you're teamed with somebody on an alert or raid, their name in bars next to you, and there's an icon next to their name letting you know what they are.
Right, so when you see them in that sort of thing, but I can't just do it just off of a straight visual cue, which is what every other
game is.
Why
would I care? I don't... I mean,
well, it's especially prominent in PvP.
Okay, well, if I'm fighting them, their health bar and name pops up above them, and next to that I can see it.
Yeah, if I want to take a look at there. I can, in other games, I can look in the field of battle and fucking see someone in-game mile away and be like... Caster, they have a tiny little pet. I know that they're a warlock.
Well, see, that's because you're a WoW nerd.
This is fucking superheroes, dude. You never know what you're up against. You got some new superheroes.
They don't have dumb pets.
Do have dumb
pets. A dude with a question mark suit.
I like pets a lot. So.
All right, final question on DC. This comes from Alex D336. So they're releasing new update in a couple of weeks. Do you think they'll increase the level cap? If so, how long do you think that'll take to update? That doesn't make any sense, Alex. But no, this does not increase the level cap. One day the level cap will be increased.
Yeah, you will never get a level cap increase without paying for it. I'm just going to break your little bubble right there.
Yeah, you figure you're paying the $15 a month subscription, and SOE has said that gets you, you know, roughly monthly content. This is the first
I was going to say, well, look at the way they've treated EverQuest. EverQuest had an expansion come out every year, SOE property. But every single expansion that came out that ever increased the level cap or expansion in general, you paid for it. Yeah. That's just the way it's going to work.
This is a problem that I actually have a lot with video games nowadays, and I'm going to lay it out.
Hit it.
It's a conversational podcast.
Lay it out.
I think about extreme longevity when there's something that I love, you know? So when I'm playing a game, I often think, like, will I be able to play this game, like, 50 years from now, you know? Like, now, of course, I highly doubt that I will be, you know, maybe interested in playing that game. But, like, I sort of, when I buy something, I kind of want to think that it has permanence in my life. So in the case of, like, an MMO or something, what if there is, you love this one game, and then you know that at one day in your life in the future, you can actually physically not play it anymore because maybe servers go down or maybe the system becomes obsolete, you know?
It's a good life lesson.
It's almost eerie because, like, I think, like, when I'm playing Dissidia and stuff, and, like, I think, like, maybe, like, one day, like, my PSP will break, they don't sell them anymore, and there's no way for me to, like, you know, get one again.
Okay,
so
really?
I just wouldn't. I'm talking about extreme long term. Yeah, it's crazy. It's crazy to think about. Like, even, like, what if they, like, change the way, like, systems interface with our, like, homes, our home electricity or something?
Yeah, I think you'll have an easier time getting over it than you think. I mean, if you can get over the death of, like, family members and stuff like that.
Okay.
You might be able to get over not playing Duke Hockum.
All right, look, guys.
I'm
trying to fucking lay my heart out, and I just get stomped on.
I'm not saying that it isn't a valid concern. I think about these same things sometimes. It's the reason I still have a Nintendo 64 that collects dust at my house, just in case I ever want to play it again.
Yeah.
Let me just say, by the way, that the two things you
exed
out of here. All right, so this is – readers, why don't you email us at beyond@ign.com. Tell us if these are interesting stories.
Did you want these two news stories?
2K Sports has revealed their critically acclaimed basketball title, NBA 2K11, is officially a commercial hit, too. It sold 4 million copies worldwide. That's very impressive. That's twice as much as the last game sold.
I don't even know why we go down numbers like that.
And Armored Core 5.
Here's a game we've never talked about on the show. And the Michael Jordan game that none of us played or were that interested in.
I know, but
it sold 4 million
but
copies.
But it's considered like the maybe the best basketball game ever.
I agree.
Ever made.
I know. It's on my shelf to play.
It's right behind Double Dribble. And Armored Core 5 details.
Ooh.
Yeah.
I'm excited about that game.
What?
I mean, it's nothing great, but what I thought was interesting about it was From is working on it, the guys that did Demon's Souls, and they're bringing that like that persistent online feel to Armored Core 5, which is cool. I think that's interesting. Yeah. Apparently, Greg doesn't think that's very interesting.
Nope,
though.
Don't. Big Armored Core sucks.
Armored Care?
Core sucks.
Okay, yeah.
Armored Care also sucks.
Remember how much we all talked about Armored Core 1 through 4?
I couldn't stop talking about it.
All right. All right,
you guys are asses today. Don't shit on the things that I love. I don't shit on dumb DC Universe.
You can.
What if I ever shit on StarCraft? I always support you in your StarCraft.
I know.
And that's how you just fucked me. You just fucked me, Ryan, without a condom.
Oh,
thanks.
Shit. Well, no.
Thanks, brother.
You call Resistance dumb all the time.
You might need to go to a doctor.
Well, yeah. Yeah, but you're a man. You can take it.
Yeah, that's true.
Got
now,
a little
now
flower over here.
A little flower. Great. Awesome.
Flower, too.
Someone write in with a flower that begins with R.
A rose. Like the one flower everyone knows.
Rhododendron.
The Rhododendron Ryan Clement. I like that. That's your permanent name now.
All right.
I'm kidding. It's not. You're a man. You're more manly than me.
That's incredibly doubtful.
Okay.
You're a bigger guy.
Colin.
Yeah.
If I wasn't entrenched in DC Universe playing nothing else,
mm-hmm.
and I wanted to buy a new game, mm-hmm. where could I go to find out what games came out?
You go to the official IGN list of upcoming PlayStation software on all three platforms by the IGN editors. Okay, that's subtle. I like that.
Yeah.
There is one new game this week. One.
Sweet.
Kevin Van Damme Fishing.
Is it on PS3?
It's on PS3. There's nothing on PS2.
I want to see those trophies. All right, who put it out?
I don't know. Does it use PlayStation Move? Because that seems like an obvious one.
It probably does, but I don't know.
That would be smart.
We'll check that out, yeah.
Yeah. Also, I would just like to formally say I haven't even played DC yet, so I was not officially
Yeah, I got your copy and everything. Look at that.
No, whatever. Be like the commenters on the boards. This sucks.
No, I mean...
IGN is
Killzone 3!
I might not like it, but I would not insult a game I haven't played yet.
Digitally, what came to the store, Ryan Clements?
Digitally? I didn't know about this. Assassin's Creed 2 Deluxe Edition? What is that?
It's got all the DLC.
It's a downloadable
version.
It's got all
the DLC.
Yeah, you can download
for $30.
For $30, yeah, that's a pretty good price.
Assassin's Creed 2 is a great game.
Yes. The Undergarden. No, Colin, you were playing that a little bit, right?
No, I think
reviewed that.
Yeah.
You reviewed the PC version?
I reviewed the PC and XBLA version.
Okay.
It's all right.
When's your PS3 version going up?
Sometime.
If I buy it today and give you my system, will you use it?
Yeah.
All right.
Sorry, I just gave you more work. Bionic Commando Rearmed 2. I'm surprised because I had no idea that was like coming out soon. But
well, Hillary pooped all over it, and that was the end of that guy.
Oh, really?
Damon's reviewing it this week. Should be up by tomorrow.
Cool.
I've heard several people tell me it's not very good.
No, yeah,
that's a shame.
That too. I know.
Everybody
loves
that.
They put
first
a jump
one.
In, right, and they broke it. No, it sucks. Really.
That seems like that would make it better.
Yeah, you know, right.
Wait, they put a jump in?
You can jump.
God forbid you jump.
You couldn't jump in the old game.
Oh yeah, because you're only grappling.
Yeah.
Because his boots were so heavy, and his arm was so heavy, he couldn't jump.
That
makes sense.
And gravity was so severe as well.
Anyway, Tales from Space About a Blob.
Mm-hmm.
It's early access for PlayStation Plus subscribers.
I've heard good things about that.
Yeah, I played that game at PAX. It was really cool.
Cool.
$15, right?
Yeah.
That's harsh.
That seems to be the new price for downloadable games.
Keeps going up.
Yeah, on PSN that's a new price for a game for a week, and then it comes down. I think Top Gun's like $3 now. So.
Also, Colin, Mega Man 2?
Yeah.
PS1 classic imports. So is this another case where everything is in Japanese?
Yeah. So, by the way, we never really talked about that, but a lot of people flipped out about that piece I wrote about the PlayStation 1 imports.
Why? It's
because they're like, you've never imported a game. You it was people that I actually went on this thing and accidentally bought the game and didn't realize it was going to be in Japanese. They didn't even read the article where I said that.
Of course not. They read the headline. They were ready to go.
And then everyone was like, well, they wouldn't spend the resources to translate this game. I'm like, cool, because I never said that in the piece.
Yeah, you bought a North American...
I want instruction manuals in English.
Exactly. You bought a game off of a North American service.
Yeah. I don't care if it's called Import Store. I want a friggin' American translation. Or an English translation. Not of the game, but just of the instruction manual.
Yeah, or even a manual. Yeah, exactly.
I'd like to know how to play this.
Yeah, friggin' Desimon Plus. 140-page manual in Japanese. The hell are you... It's a make-your-own-shooter game. You can't even play it. The hell are you releasing that here for? That's it.
Very true. Hey, you get enough Samurai Showdown yet? Because if not, you can download that for $6.99 for your PSP. That's one purchase. There's $7 where I would absolutely not want to spend. You're not only playing a game that's been out for 4 million years, but you're playing it on a PSP, which is not exactly the best place to play a fighting game, in my opinion.
Do you know that when the Neanderthals and the Cro-Magnons met in Europe, that the Cro-Magnons were like, look how advanced we are. We created Samurai Showdown. And ever since then, everyone's been playing.
And then in the mini realm, nothing too funnily named, unfortunately, but we do have Wacky Lands Boss.
That's pretty funny.
$4.99. And also Pac-Man Championship Edition.
Yeah, people have been waiting for
Championship
that.
Mini Edition. Version.
For like $17. Now, how much does it cost?
It's $4.5.
For $25.
$25.
No.
I know. $4.99.
$4.99.
Still too expensive.
Dan writes in about that very game. I've been waiting to get Pac-Man Championship Edition, but now that it is available as a mini for $5, do you think that's a better deal? Oh, okay. He was waiting to get Pac-Man Championship DX on PS3. Now it's a mini for $5. Is that a better deal? Or should I get the PSN version and play it on my PS3? Trophies aren't a huge deal breaker for me, if that helps. Doesn't matter, Dan. DX, the PS3 version, is so good. And
it looks great on an HDTV.
Totally. I played the hell out of that, and then I downloaded the mini and played that, and it was like... night and day. Like, it's not like the mini's a bad game. If that's your only option to play Pac-Man, sure. And you really like Pac-Man, you want to go play on the go, fine. But it's slower. You don't get the crazy cool powers. It's like, oh, okay.
Yeah, but isn't the mini also an iteration of the game that came out like
on
last
Xbox.
Year?
Yeah, it's a version that came out on Xbox.
So I would just spend the $5 more and get the better game,
totally.
The newer
game.
Yeah,
totally. 100%. You should get the
only $5.
Pac-Man
that's like,
Championship Edition DX is the one.
That was
you get.
My weekly allowance growing up. I think I got $5 a week.
I got $6. My parents loved me more.
I was getting screwed.
When I was really little, my mom used to give me like $1 a week for like, cleaning the baseboards or whatever. And then I'd go to like KB Toys and buy a G.I. Joe and like walk up and just give the lady like $1. And then my mom would like kind of like sneak up behind me and pay the rest of it.
Right, because the lady would be like, it would have been funny if she shattered your dreams. Are you fucking idiot, kid?
You know how much this shit costs?
You know how much when I got in my pocket? I'm buying this right now and burning it. All right, let's get back to the readers. What's up?
Oh, okay. I was just going to say I can have a quick new segment.
Lay it on me.
You want me to do it?
Yep.
So we have discussed this in the past. Because we don't always have trophy tips to give you guys, we decided that maybe in that spot, we might, throw something in to surprise the readers. Listeners. You guys aren't reading anything. Unless you're reading and listening. Does that ever happen?
Someone might be reading a transcript of this podcast.
Oh, very nice.
Because they're
anyway,
deaf.
So, in the case, now, did you guys have any really great trophy chips this
nope.
week?
No. Right.
That's why I was skipping. I also skipped Pick of the Week, and I also added a segment,
I know.
As you recall.
I love it.
All right.
So, my quick little thing, my offhanded segment is Ryan has something to say.
My offhanded segment is Ryan has something to say. Hey, guys, I'm Ryan. Let's talk.
I like that one was way better than my comment corner one.
Just the tip.
So here's what I have to say today. I took a cab into work this morning because Walter, one of our colleagues, had an early morning meeting. He didn't want to deal with Muni breaking down and, being totally screwed over. So I joined him for his cab ride. Here's what I don't like.
Okay.
Cab drivers that automatically start to have a gigantic discussion with you about some shit they're passionate about when you haven't initiated the conversation. Mm. Now, I am all for interacting with strangers because I think it's fun. You can get some snappy conversation in there. But if in that situation, I prefer to like be like, okay, I am in the mood to talk, and I'll be like, hey, Cabby, what's up, man? What do you got going on today? You talk to him.
What up, man?
But if you sit down and you're like half passed out carrying a bunch of bags, you look exhausted, and they're like, yeah, what do you think about that shit in Egypt? And if you want to go to Egypt and be like the prime minister there, man, that would be great. I'm living in a palace. And he's talking to me about this. And I'm like, dude, Walter's asleep in the back of the cab. I look like shit. Like, let us rest.
Why don't you
come
up behind him?
That's when you tell him, shut up and drive.
Yeah, ignore him. I do that. When they do that, I whip out the phone. I'm like,
See, that's hard for me to do because it to me, like, it's.
Or just say, I don't know enough about this to make an opinion.
I just don't. It's hard for me to
be. Just say,
I don't speak English.
But so at the beginning of the cab ride, I was like, You know, I said the bare minimum just so he knows, like, I'm being polite, but I didn't want to engage in deep conversation. Mm. But no, he kept going. Then he started talking about his kids. And, oh, man.
And you're just like, I don't care about your
kids.
You should
have said, I hate children.
But anyway, all right. So, yeah, what do you guys think?
I agree.
Talkative cab drivers.
Hate it. Unless I engage it, like you said.
Yeah, exactly.
I just put in my headphones.
Yeah.
Do you guys want to hear a funny cab story from me and Clayman?
Absolutely.
You might know this one.
I would love
First of all, I had a lot of funny cab experiences with Clayman.
Yes,
and I, but the best one was it was me and like Eric and Charles and Clayman. So I had to sit up in the front seat. There was like this woman, this large woman driving the cab. And she immediately got into a conversation with us, broke out like a binder. And was like, check out my artwork. And I'm like, all right. So I started flipping through it. All of her art consisted of, like, not badly drawn, but pretty crude by, I guess, proper artistic standards. Animals, mostly like astrological symbols and stuff. So, like, you know, like a bull and stuff. Like a bull having sex with, like, some other astrological, like, showing everything. I totally X-rated stuff, just showing, like, passing her art around the cab.
Nice.
It's like one of Clayman's favorite stories. She was the best part is that, so we went, this is when I lived in Daly City. We had to drop them off. We were in, like, North Beach or something. We had to drop everyone off in the sunset. And then Clayman thought it was really funny that I had them be alone with this woman in the car. And she had to drive you all the way back to Daly City, and I was like thinking about getting out, and she's like, no, check out more of my art. So I had to, like, sit in the front seat with her, even though no one was in the back, and it was, like, totally awkward. It was
my best cab story was when I was in E3 2 years ago, and I met a bunch of people downtown, and then afterwards the bartender. I stuttered over. Stuttered, Greg. I stuttered. Okay.
I didn't do anything. Why are you yelling?
I was like, I need a cab, and he's like, I'll call someone. I know someone. And then the guy rolls up, and it's not a cab. It is a dude with a van.
It's nice.
And me and my friend get in, and his children are all sleeping in the back because it's like 1 a.m. And I'm like, and I open the door, and he's like, come in. And I was like, okay. So we sit down, and we're like, your kids are back there, and he's like, yeah, they'll sleep through it. It's okay. And then he's like, how are you guys going? We tell him. He's like, I don't know, $12. And I was like, what? There's no meter? And he's like, nah, man. It's $12.
Wow.
Just enjoy the ride.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, right?
My best cab story was in St. Louis. It was after a night of drinking. Me and my two friends were like, we're going to White Castle. We're going to go to this White Castle. We're going to get a sack of sliders and do this. So we got a cab, and it was like this awesome cab driver because we're drunk. Now I want to talk to strange cab drivers.
Yeah, exactly.
His name was like Papa Giorgio or whatever. So like Mr. Papa Giorgio. We're like, yeah, Mr. Papa. We're like acting like a bunch of idiots, and he drops us off at White. He's like, oh, it's just here. I just dropped someone at White Castle. And like he drops us there, and we're like trying to explain for him to come back to us. And at this point, the guys he dropped off come out. They're like, Mr. Papa Giorgio. And he's like, yeah, I'll drop them off, and I'll come back. And we're like, where are you guys going? And they were going like somewhere where we just come from. And he's like, yes, it'll be 10 minutes. We're like, great. We go in, we order this huge bag of burgers and fries and stuff, and we come out and wait and no Mr. Papa Giorgio. And we're like, fuck, what are we gonna do? It's like 3 a.m. at St. Louis at this all night fucking White Castle. What are we gonna do? Crap, blah blah. And we're bitching about it drunkenly in front of the White Castle, and this big old lady comes out with her burgers, and she's like, well, I'll give you a ride. And we're like, she's like,
oh my god.
40-year-old, 40-50-year-old.
I think you told this story like 2 years ago.
Really?
Maybe.
Keep going.
Yeah, it gets to be very definitive in what's happening.
I'm ready.
So she's this big old lady. And she's like, I'll drive you home. She's got her burgers. And we look, and she's just got a van.
And the drunks, and you were like, yeah, it sounds
good.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay. And we climb in. She's like, I'll just want $5 because it wasn't that far, but it was far enough to where you need a cab. We're like, okay. So we're going, and we're driving and talking. And, you know, St. Louis is nice downtown, but East St. Louis is bad news, you know what I mean? And I had the general idea, like, I had been to St. Louis enough at this point in my Mizzou career to know where we were trying to get back to. And she's driving, and she keeps making lefts. And I know this is getting us not to where we need to be over on the right. And I'm just like, all right, she makes one more left. And I'm next to the door. I'm like, I'll throw it open the door and jump it out. And I'm drunk enough that this is like all makes sense. And I'm like, I have my hand on the door. Like, I'm ready. And at that moment, she makes a right and starts going back to where we need to be.
All right.
So, but there was literally a moment where we were one turn away from me jumping out, throwing White Castle burgers up in the air, and sprinting.
Oh my God, that's awesome! Yeah, I have. Okay, well, I'm glad that segment went way better than I thought it was going
to. Was Ryan talking about stuff? Yeah. Hey guys, we talked about stuff.
Dude.
All right,
that's hot.
Now it's time for the readers to talk with Reader Mail. Mm-hmm. Colin?
Yeah.
It didn't come up in your little thing there, but you briefly mentioned it. Resistance 3. UK guys got to see it. There's a video preview up, video footage up, gameplay, trailer. It's the whole nine yards. Nexus underscore Knight says, Resistance 3. Just want to get Colin's thoughts on the new gameplay video. Peace out!
Oh, I haven't seen everything yet, but I actually read the piece. And from what I understand, this is the thing we were talking about the most. This is the thing I was intrigued about the most. I think I talked about this with Anthony, too, was... their acute attention to detail with the story is cool just because – so Nathaniel Hale is dead. Spoiler alert. And he obviously was infected with the Chimeran virus, which is why he was able to regenerate his health. And obviously regenerative health is a very common thing in shooters. Because like they don't have anyone infected with the Chimeran virus anymore and 90% of the Earth's population is now dead there is no regenerative health anymore. So
things
I like
are looking up.
Yeah, so things are great. The Chimera are terraforming the Earth, and everything's all fucked. But somehow a train still works, and they're taking it to New York. And somehow they also built the St. Louis Arch.
When they were doing that, they advanced train technology to run on solar energy.
Oh, okay.
They're done. Solved.
Easy.
Okay.
But I like just the general aesthetic of the game. Like, it's so gray and dark. It just looks so cool. Like, I really feel, you know, this game – like, who saw the game?
Martin
and Patch over there saw it. I think Patch actually did the write-up.
Okay, yeah. And Patch was saying, like, you know, this it really shows that this game has so much extra time and polish into it.
That's
already.
Awesome.
There you go. That's what I want.
Yeah.
I want them to take their time. When Insomniac has time, they can work miracles.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's
water into wine shit.
Resistance 2 was cool. I really liked it, but it was quick, and obviously it sold very well. It sold like 400,000 copies in the first week. So it wasn't like it was not a critical success, a commercial success, but some people were down on it. So it seems like they just took their time with this one, made it a little different. It's really dire, which I like. Because I feel like Resistance games actually get more and more dark, which is nice. There's like less and less hope, in other words. And the weapon wheel is coming back.
Oh, I'm so excited. I'm pumped for Resistance 3. This is going to be good.
Yeah. You know who else is
pumped? We're going to have a good time.
Haze Blaze. He writes in, Colin, I repent. I hadn't been feeling your enthusiasm for the Resistance franchise. After R2 let me down, I didn't think that Insomniac had it in them to top the greatness of Resistance 1. So perhaps I should repent to them, because 1 minute and 47 seconds into that 4-minute clip, I had to pause it and pre-order the game. That shit is fucking sick. Weapon wheel back for the motherfucking win.
That's my favorite email of the day.
That was a good one, yeah. My only criticism, I thought it all looked really good, but my one criticism is that there was a part where he was shooting one of those electricity guns or whatever, and it looked like there was no feedback. And that's my whole problem with Resistance 2 is that I felt like I shot guns, and it was just clearly a bullet coming out of an animated thing. There was no, like, kick, like a kill zone or something like that.
The one thing – so this is how I would explain this, because I'm not sure, like, the Rossmore, for instance, which is a human gun, how it might react to the Auger, which is a Chimeran gun.
Right.
So maybe the Chimeran guns don't have any kickback at all, and that's how they kind of explain it, because they are obviously an advanced species. So maybe there is no – like, when – you know – maybe when they're shooting that whatever weapon they use, there is no kickback.
I will say that the reason that there's kickback in a normal weapon is that there's a black powder and there's an explosion. So if there's no explosion, it would make sense that there wouldn't be kickback.
Yeah, but it's an energy weapon. Yeah.
I mean, that's just my – maybe that's not the – see, that would be cool is if, like, you know, the human resistance had to use, like, old weapons from when the Chimera first broke out of Russia or whatever. So they have a lot of, like, crude weapons, and there's a lot of kickback and stuff like that. But then when you get, like, an Auger or a Chimeran weapon, then there's no kickback, and they work a lot smoother. And that would be cool is if those weapons are becoming rare or something, and when you find one, you really, like, cherish it, and you put it in, and you access it on the weapon wheel when you really need it. Otherwise, you use, like, a cruder human weapon.
You know how you just said terraforming Resistance 3? That's what's happening there?
Yeah, so apparently... Yeah. Oh, yeah, I'm sorry.
No, no.
I thought you were asking.
Yeah, well, I was going to say that just reminded me of the trailer for Battle for Los Angeles. That you see those? See that movie?
No.
Yeah, a little trailer action? No?
No.
Nobody's seen that trailer? Really?
No.
I saw a bus with a sign on it yesterday.
It looks... Oh, that I love that trailer. It looks so good. Look it up.
Okay.
It's good.
Also look up Hobo with a Shotgun.
Okay.
All right. Look that up as well.
Jason writes into beyond@ign.com and says, "Hey, Beyond Crew, I know you guys have full friend lists, so I was wondering, how often do you look to see what everyone is playing and then choke the trophy levels?"
Never. I look at what everyone's playing every time I sign on.
Me too. First thing I do, scroll over to check my messages, and then I go through and see what everybody's
doing. Honestly, I don't check trophies except for when I first add a person, and I check Greg's. That's basically it.
I check it like as far as their level.
Like yeah, I let it pop up, but yeah. I only check Greg. I only like look at Greg's level and stuff. I don't really care what anyone else has, to be honest.
Adrian writes in, as you should know, Bionic Commando Rearm 2 requires you to be connected to the PSN to play the game. What do you think of this? Will this decrease sales as people have to jump through hoops to play their game? I play console games to be away from DRM. I don't pirate games, but the requirements to play games is ridiculous sometimes.
Final Fight did the same thing.
Exactly, and people were really pissy about it. Anthony, thoughts? We look like you're losing you.
No, I'm just thinking because there. I mean, it's different too because I mean there was a problem. I knew plenty of people who bought games legitimately off PSN and then shared them with friends because you could do that really easy. And XBLA, the way they've always got around that is, it signs it to a serial number, and so you have to be signed in on your profile if you're playing it on a console with a different serial number. But there's no real good way to do that with PSN. I don't know. I don't really see a problem with it. I mean, if you're able to sign on and buy a game, I'm curious who's like signing on, buying again, then being like, all right, now I'm signing off so I can play this game.
Yeah,
like,
that's exactly the
now
point.
I'm gonna unplug my PlayStation and move it here.
Yeah, I mean, it's all about the inherent. You know, if you, like Anthony said, if you can sign on the PlayStation Network, you have it's inherently perceived that you have an internet connection. So why would you not want to be signed on when you were playing the game? If that's all you have to do, then what's the big deal? And if you are playing the game legitimately, you have nothing to worry about.
I also am curious to know a statistic of how much readily accessible internet is in American homes now. Because I feel like maybe like 10 years ago or maybe a little less, it might have been like internet was a little trickier. Like you didn't have, you know, not everybody had like a cable connection and stuff when people were rocking the... When was
I always hear
when
really
was 56K modem, all the modem action? When was all that happening?
I don't know, 2000, 2001.
I had a 56K modem in like 98, 99.
Yeah, somewhere I would say.
Late 90s or something.
I remember my friend got a cable modem in 2000, and that was,
and
like
it was
a big
shit.
Deal.
We
all went over there to download music on his computer.
Yeah. That was the big thing going to college, that I was going to have access to this Ethernet thing.
See, that's what I'm wondering. Like, I think cable connections are like the standard. I mean, they're obviously the standard now. And I wonder how many,
I actually still think that most homes don't even have DSL in America. More homes have dial-up still than have faster connections.
Yeah.
No way.
The number, when somebody actually quotes a number, it always is depressingly low.
Yeah, it's still surprisingly low. Like, it's just like, you know, the vast majority of people don't have HDTV still either. You know,
well, but just dial up still, really?
Yeah, I mean,
some people don't have access to that service if they wanted it.
Yeah, my parents don't.
If any Beyond listeners have like read any reports on BBC or wherever, they might do.
Yeah,
a survey
let us write on that orange juice. Send us in some tech information.
I mean, I'm just saying, Americans.
actually quote a source, if they just send us a link. To
American
a story.
Internet infrastructure is pretty terrible.
Yeah, it's awful. I mean, because I was going to say, I remember in the mid '90s, I lived in Maine at the time. You see commercials. Said this is broadband, this is the way. When they were like laying broadband connections, that was like over 15 years ago, and people still don't have. I mean, this is obviously a very big country.
My parents cannot get broadband where they're. The best they can get is satellite internet.
Yeah, that sucks. You know, I mean, satellite internet's good, but it's expensive. So you know, it is disappointing. We do need to do something about that. Like, that should be actually very important to us.
That's why, like, Japan apparently just has internet everywhere. It's like flowing out of people's.
Japan's
thoughts.
Also as big as my hand.
Yeah. Really. Wow. I can't believe our plane landed on that. I got it.
I was just going to say, I think the solution is not even going to be broadband. It's eventually going to be like wireless, and then we're just going to have huge towers and shit probably all over the country.
Like just fucking resistance towers. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Kevin Brock writes in, I just saw the rumored cloud saving with firmware 3.60. Think there is any truth to this? PlayStation Plus only, so it will further enhance the value of it. I'm excited. Hope it's true. What do you think?
Yeah, it's awesome. I mean, was I talking about this with... Oh, no, I was talking about with Mark Ryan that, like, initially the only use it seemed to have was to transfer, I guess, data if you wanted to get a new PlayStation or something like that, or save your data. But I wonder if it has something to do with the NGP.
Yeah, that would be the hope, right? Personally, I'm not that excited about it just on face value. Okay, when I have to delete something to make room, I'm deleting game data, utility stuff, the installs, not the, you know, 60 gigabyte.
I think they're
KBs. I got the KBs.
I think what they're finding is that people use their profiles and stuff at friends' houses and stuff like that. I mean, like, for instance, in Call of Duty, if I go over to my friend's house, I can sign into my profile, but it doesn't have my save, so it doesn't know that I've leveled up and done all this crazy stuff. cloud saves and stuff has been kind of an ongoing thing in Steam and stuff too, and I think they've seen success with that.
But what if I was playing Comet Crash on my PlayStation 3, and then I came into work and I accessed the cloud and played it on my NGP?
Whoa,
yeah, that'd be nice.
That's what I hope that is for.
Even if it's not accessing the same game, but accessing another game where you could continue to build on that save.
Right.
That's why I actually really like MMOs and sorry to mention again, things like StarCraft, where I can just install it anywhere I go. Like when I went home for vacation and like I was like, you know what? My mom's computer would totally run StarCraft, and I can just like boot it right up.
Yeah.
And it has your saves. It has your profile.
It has all my ladder information.
That is nice.
That's
I do like that. That part I like.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's neat.
But that's it.
I just think they're realizing.
I mean, like mine. I mean, it makes sense. I get it. It makes sense, especially for like us who have profile, have systems at home, have systems at work. Not being able to transfer that stuff without, you know, get here and be like, oh crap, I need my Dead Space safe from
it's
home.
Not as big of a deal.
I think that there's a limited audience that will find it useful, but those of us who do, it's just an added incentive to use the service.
All right, we're running long, so let's see what we got here. We got two ones we got to hit in the back. Ryan, here's a very fast one, all right?
Yeah, I'm ready.
This one comes C. Rob. Huh? Ryan, yes. I just realized that you guys have never given the Beyond audience any bad advice, ever. So I decided to try listening to K-pop, and holy shit, I love it. Are there any groups in particular you would recommend? From what I found on YouTube, my favorite group so far is After School.
Okay, excellent. So if you're looking for great girl groups, there's a few you have to hit. I'm going to give you four of them right now, okay? I'll save the best for last. First, Girls' Generation, if you want something really poppy. And
there's like 12 of them.
Nine, but they're the most like beautiful girls ever. Secret, four girls, really like jazz, big band-inspired music. 4 Minute, if you want. Four, like the number, and then Minute. That's the name of the group.
Those are
five girls, but they do a little bit. They do poppy stuff with kind of like a techno undertones.
And the best
and
of the best.
Best of the best. 21, spelled 2-N-E, and then the number 1. 21.
Got it.
All right. Four girls,
so good.
Most amazingly talented girls you'll ever see. And they do just so pop, hip-hop, amazing shit. This is the one group where Anthony has actually listened to them on his own time without me even telling him to listen to it.
It's true, I do.
Okay, good.
I want you to listen to some Korean death metal next.
They probably have that somewhere.
I'm sure they do. I'm sure it's awesome, too.
Nick writes in. He says, Beyond.
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 Hey, Ryan, Colin, Greg, and any guests on the podcast this week. My name is Nick Malloy. I live in Toronto, Canada, and I just wanted to say, holy shit, Greg, did I just hear you on We're Alive? I was catching up on some of the episodes, and I had to come to a complete stop because I'm almost certain I heard you doing one of the voices of the characters. Is this true, and if so, how did it come about? That is true. I made my vocal acting debut on We're Alive, Chapter 18, Part 2 of 3, this past Monday. And it came about very simply that a listener on my IGN months ago said, you love zombies, you need to listen to We're Alive, because it's like it's a radio drama on the internet in podcast form about zombie apocalypse. And I listened and fell in love with it and started talking about it on shows, and the creators reached out to me and thanked me for the support, and then we got to talking, and they offered me a part on the show.
How'd you do it? Did you do it via Skype?
No, I did it in our VO booth one day after work. I had hit record, and I walked in there, and I did it.
And then you sent them the file?
I did a bunch of takes, yeah, and sent them the file, and they...
Did you die?
No, I'm not dead. Spoilers. My name's Pete, and I'm very much alive in this, and I should be back for a show. So a lot of emails about this. Thank you all for being able to recognize my voice. And that's one of the reasons, right, that I got asked to do it in general, because I mentioned on the podcast not thinking about it, and I guess a million people wrote into them saying, hey, I just found out about it from Greg Miller. This is cool. Thank you very much. So that was one of the reasons they picked me out of the crowd to do anything. So
nice. I want to appear on the show and battle with you.
Okay. When everything goes to shit.
I haven't been able to listen. And okay. I'm just curious to know, how is this show set up? Like, what's it? What would you compare it to? Because I don't really listen to radio dramas. So how does it work?
I mean, it's a zombie movie. It's a zombie apocalypse movie that has...
Or TV show.
Yeah, or anything like that.
Is it recordings of people, or are you actually hearing them, like, walk around? And
You're hearing them walk around. It's a completely... It's like an old Superman serial or something you hear on the radio.
You know, a door creaks open because someone's opening a door.
Exactly. Gunshots.
Yeah, it's like the old radio serials or whatever.
Yeah, they do a really good job of painting the picture in your head about it.
Okay, cool.
This also reminded me, too.
Is there a narrator?
No, there's no narrator.
Okay.
The very beginning of why this is all people are recounting stories, right, is that when it all starts or whatever, and they get a group of survivors together, like there's a couple military dudes, one of them named Michael, and Michael tells everybody, start writing down everything in these journals. That way we can learn from any experiences we have, find out what these things are doing, why they're doing it, what their patterns are, and stuff like that.
Gotcha.
So when there is a moment where somebody's like retelling what's happening or narrating part of a story, it's because they've written it.
Yeah,
exactly. It's because they're writing in their journal.
Cool.
It's awesome. This also reminded me that I've never pimped the fact that I have a new podcast. I co-host with Brittany from my IGN. I co-host We're Not Dead. Or yeah, that's right. No, we're alive. No, wait, what?
We're
no.
not dead.
We're Alive is the zombie podcast, and then we host the community fan cast. We Are Not Dead, where all we do is talk about We're Alive. So if you have no interest in We're Alive, don't listen to We're Not Dead, because right. that'll make no sense.
Right.
But if you're one of the hundreds of dozens of fans.
The dozens of fans
pick that
of
up.
The show.
All right, those are the real questions. Now we have two little things to hit up here before we go.
Sure.
Corey, start listening. This comes from Jen. Beyond. Hi, my name is Jen. I just got married this week, and my husband and I have been listening to IGN podcasts together for several years. I know you don't usually do shout-outs, but I was hoping you'd make an exception for us. We are huge fans. We're going to be listening to this podcast on the plane to Hawaii for our honeymoon, and I wanted to surprise my new husband through one of his favorite podcasts. His name is Corey. Thanks, we love the show. Keep up the awesome podcast. You guys keep us entertained every week. P.S. I attached a wedding picture of us with our Mario wedding cake.
This is adorable. I was so happy to get this email. I'm glad you read it. I totally forgot about it.
I can see all the other Mario things. I see the mushroom and stuff, and then I saw the thing that looked like a green penis.
I know, yeah.
But I realized it's a tube and grass.
Yeah. It's a delightful little picture, but I agree, too, that I did say...
Oh, could be a little phallic there.
Cupcake.
It's great to see gaming couples that are actually attractive, normal-looking people.
I know. Yes, you're both beautiful people.
Yes,
both
beautiful.
Beautiful people.
Fantastic.
Cupcake. Yeah, sounds like a post-hardcore band or something.
have a good honeymoon.
Yeah.
Where are they going?
They're going to Hawaii.
Oh, beautiful.
Probably get on the sandy beaches there.
Oh wow! Yeah, that.
You see it? Yeah. Right.
Whoops.
Good. I'm glad it just isn't me and Anthony with cocks on the brain. Andre writes in and he says, I made a podcast Beyond Little Big Planet 2 level. I don't mean to plug it for hearts or anything, but I did put a lot of effort into it. It would be great if the Beyond Nation could check it out. My level is called Podcast Beyond : The Pit. You can find it by searching the level name or my PSN, Marvin TM1. Of course, there's also a website called LBP.me where you can log in with your PlayStation Network account, queue up levels and save them that way. That'll then be ready to go on your PS3.
Awesome.
I made a tiny URL for this one if you want to do it. So go to tinyurl.com/LBP173. Obviously, LBP, a Little Big Planet, 173, Podcast Beyond, episode 173. Haven't played it myself.
Okay.
I got this morning, and I was like, I don't have time to jump in. I do like that, though. If you have cool Little Big Planet 2 levels, send them along. We can feature them. I'll send them along earlier than Wednesday, and I'll start playing them, and then I'll have a good one every week for somebody to play.
That's cool that I had absolutely no idea about that community site that can just direct you to the level downloads.
Fantastic.
Great stuff.
LBP.me is one of the best things they put in that show. The show.
How is it? So how does it actually sync with your – you sign in with your PlayStation account?
Yep. Yeah, and then you can go through levels, see what your friends are doing, see how your levels are doing. Every level that gets generated now, or made, I should say, gets a web address for it, so you can send people directly to it, so they can read about it. And
that's
then they see ratings, they see high scores, they can add it to their queue. And then when you turn on your PS3 and you go there, it'll say, you have new levels in your queue, you want to play them right now?
Yeah. And see, here's the thing, 50 years from now, what if that site doesn't exist anymore?
It won't.
Exactly. That's sad.
I don't think so. I think it's going to be okay.
My primary goal is just living
the times.
Next 50 years.
Right now, live in the moment. Maybe you won't be here 50 years from now. Did you think of that?
I do, yes.
I don't know if you've seen Homefront, but the North Korean EMP is going to wipe everything out, so all these things are going to be gone.
Shit.
Final tidbit before I gave it over to Ryan.
Yes.
Don wrote in, says, hey, I got this Pixel Junk shooter code. Give it away. 26KEFQBKP7CN. I'm Greg Miller. This is Podcast Beyond, episode 173. Follow IGN on Twitter @IGN. Follow Ryan on Twitter @PuamCider. Follow Colin on Twitter @NoTaxation. Follow Anthony on Twitter @ChuffMoney. ChuffMoney. And I'm Game Over Greggy, of course. Everybody's on Facebook, but few of us. I think Ryan still checks it.
I still do. And now that I found – I was hating on Facebook for a while, but now that I found that I could just have my tweets publish as my profile status on Facebook, I'm fine now. It still requires way too much management, though.
One of the reasons I hate Facebook, of course, is that I'm maxed out, so I broke Facebook. That feature doesn't work for me.
You
cannot publish my tweets.
Can you are you still at 5,000? They haven't improved. Like,
well, no,
they haven't upped to the level cap.
They have not upped the level cap. I've maxed out the friends and friend requests, so it just locks you out completely now if you try to talk to me.
Can you even like log in at all or?
Not on my phone. My phone chugs trying to run it. So,
God.
I don't care. Twitter's the way
Mark
to go
Zuckerberg,
for me. If you tweet @GameOverGreggy and you have a real question that isn't dumb or just calling me a dick, I'll respond to it.
Yeah.
I'll block you if you call me a dick.
I think we need to have Mark. I mean, I just saw The Social Network. So
I haven't yet.
I know he listens to our show.
Okay. I supported his movie. The least he can do is listen to my podcast.
So I saw it on a plane, so I didn't even pay for it. But, yeah, I think he needs to up the level cap. I mean, apparently he's a genius. So...
I think they need to stop fucking with the site.
I'm pretty sure that they're all a very small handful of people that this is a problem for. So they don't care.
Yeah, I know.
But, like, look, no, hold on a second, though. Look at how many popular people, celebrities, are on Twitter and have in the tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of followers. And in some case, millions.
On Twitter, yes. I mean, but in Facebook, Facebook's a place for real-life friends.
Yeah, and you can have a fan page. That's what they'll always, that's what they'll tell Greg, is, like, if you have a problem with it, just make a fan page.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Seems like a lot of work.
It's just, yeah,
no, it is. Facebook is very cumbersome.
A whole bunch of people.
Facebook is just, they've just, I really love Facebook. I've been using it for 7 years. My account's 7 years old.
Yeah.
You know? I made it for meeting college friends.
Exactly. And it used to be awesome. Like, and I think it hit its stride like 2006, 2007, 2008. Now they will just not stop fucking with it. You know, like every time I sign on, now I go to like, you know, I click on the right thing to like accept friend requests. It's like a box of it was like, your friend requests have moved. And then it like shows you like where it goes to the like, other side. It's like, so why does it even say it here?
Yeah.
What the fuck is the point of this link?
Yeah.
You know, and they just like, they got that rid of, you know, I used to like accept everyone and then add them all to a list that, which is people I don't know. That's what the list is called.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now they got rid of the drop down. So they have to individually add each person to a list. So like, I have like 50 people I have to add. It's just like, they just will not stop messing with that website. They just need to leave it alone, I think. That's my opinion. It's turning into friggin' MySpace.
Ryan, take me home.
Will do, sir. I got a message from Chris. Hi, Chris. He says, Beyond, longtime listener of the show, could you please play my band, The Clean Beats? Beats spelled B-E-E-T-S. I know the name sounds like we show up in to middle schools and tell kids not to do drugs, but we really are cool. If anybody comes up to me at our show in Dallas and yells Beyond, they will get a free CD.
Yeah. Nice.
I am a skinny white guy in the band playing bass. I do love how – oh, so they're playing at the House of Blues on February 18th and Pitchers in Arlington on
February 18th. That's a legitimate venue, House of Blues.
Yeah. Check Facebook for date of show at Dallas's Best Lesbian Bar. I love how that's the end of his email. I don't even know what that means. As one of those, a lesbian bar, I guess, maybe. But thank you, Chris. If you want to send some music that you have produced or you're in a band and you want us to pimp you out, send it to beyond@ign.com along with all your other inquiries, questions, comments. Inquiries and questions are the same thing.
Yeah, whatever.
Anyway, I'm going to play The Clean Beats. This is a song called Takeaway, which will apparently be playing at a lesbian bar in Dallas. That's Beyond for me.
Beyond!
Beyond!
Beyond! Anthony?
Beyond.
Your love for me, it's all or never. Hey there, this is Justin Bartha. I made a funny new podcast, King of the Egg Cream. It has the greatest cast in the history of podcasts with actors like Louis Black.
I'm torn by my feelings for two women.
Bobby Cannavale.
You can eat it, or if someone hits you, you can put it on your cut.
Melanie Lynskey.
I wonder what these marvelous things are that look just like boiled chicken feet.
Jason Ritter.
I can break things and pick locks and kill people.
Michael Stuhlbarg.
The whole point is to inspire people that they should make themselves better.
Ari Grainer.
No, don't whet its appetite. What are you, an idiot?
Me, Justin Bartha.
That's not just any egg cream, that's a Lemke's special.
And all narrated by the hilarious Richard Kind.
This is the story of Harry Dalowitz. And how he rose from nothing to become New York's King of the Egg Cream.
So if you like funny true stories, come listen to King of the Egg Cream, available wherever you get your podcasts.